All right, there we go. God, you are good and you are gracious, Lord. You are good and you are gracious. I'm all set, thank you. So, tonight...
Behind every good woman is a penis.
It was interesting to me because I didn't look up the Hebrew month or anything this time. My lock got stuck behind the microphone. So when Al was sharing what this month was and everything, I always love how connected everything is when you're listening to the Spirit. You know, when you listen to the Lord and you're just like, oh, everything is all interwoven because, of course.
It's interesting what Valerie's talking about right now because that is the color for this month.
Oh, the purple?
And we usually don't have the screen on.
And so now we have more connections. And so when Al was saying that this is the month to overtake despair and depression, and that he was talking about that he was encouraging us to take 28 days and say that my joy is coming, and that the tribe for this month, it was talking about that the sweetness that is coming. And so tonight, I'm sharing about the joy of the Lord. And so it's just really beautiful how the Lord makes connections, how he draws us together and how he continues to reinforce and highlight what he wants us to be aware of in a season. You know, it's a really beautiful thing that he does. Where we go through our lives and we kind of see, oh, this gets underscored, and you see it so many different ways. And so that's just an encouragement to me, because as you've heard, we had a all-night youth thing, and I was not there all night. We have four children, my husband and I, and so he was there from 4 p.m. till whenever he got home this morning, and so I slept and went in late and then came home and slept so I could kind of be on deck for the kids. So it's an encouragement to me that I was hearing rightly from the Lord, you know, that even tired, it was the Lord speaking. And so you guys can turn to John 15 so that you're there. So a lot of times when we say joy, we get confused and think of it as the same thing as being happy, right? And there, of course, there is a long-term eternal happiness that the Lord talks about. But frequently, when we're talking about it, it's two different things. Happiness and joy are two different things. And so my love of the dictionary continues. And so so happy is enjoying a pleasure from the gratification of desires or the possession of good. You are pleased because of something that you have right now, right? Something good happens and it brings you pleasure. Or you have something good and it brings you pleasure. Or you eat something good and it brings you pleasure, right? So you have, there's something good happening in the moment or in the time, in that present. And so joy has some of that, but it's the passion or emotion excited by the acquisition, so the having, but or the expectation of good. It's a delight of the mind from the consideration of the or the assured approaching possession of a good. So happiness is, I have it right now, and I'm pleased. Joy is, it is going to come, and I'm pleased. Okay? Like I said, I have four children. We've had some hard pregnancies and some hard labors in there, you know, and so generally I do not have a good time being pregnant. You know, I've had some really hard medical things, and labors, I have cesarean, so I have major surgeries. And so it's not a fun time. It is not pleasurable in the moment, right? I'm not in the midst of it pleased by what is happening. But I have joy because of what's coming, right? Like, I can endure whatever is happening in my body or the momentary pains, right? Because there is a joy and an expectation of something, a future good that is coming, right? I can see this child in my future. And so the issues in the moment aren't that big a deal because of what is coming, right? Okay. So John 15, starting in verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered, and they gather them and throw them into the fire and they are burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. Verse 9, as the Father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. And then verse 11, these things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. So this chunk of scripture, John 14 to John 17, is the last night of Jesus' life before the cross. He has the Last Supper, right? And these are the last things that he shares with his disciples before the cross. So these are the things that he's saying, this is what they need to know to endure in this turmoil, right? And then and he prays for them and for himself as well. And so in the midst of this, I've talked before about this idea that this love idea that God has going through here, that Jesus says, as the Father loves me, I love you, you know, as I love you, love each other, right? He's doing this whole, like, this intensity of love. And in the midst of this, he says, I'm sharing all these things about who I am in relationship to you, who you are in relationship to me, that I'm the vine and you're the branches and you have to be plugged in and connected, that there's love, intense love that I have for you. All these things I'm sharing with you so that my joy can remain in you and so that your joy may be full, right? And so that is God's heart and desire for us, is that we have his joy, right? Not just joy, but his joy. And that the joy that we have is completely filled up. That it's not just this, like, tiny little well or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But whatever container that is inside of us that he's designated for his joy, that it is full to the brim and overflowing. That is his desire for us. And so then it's kind of like, okay, so what is joy anyway? And how do we get there then, right? And so one of the big things is that joy is not natural. It's spiritual, right? So when we just defined happiness and we were talking about that it's something good that we have right now, that is a natural thing. You know, like, there's certain things that make me happy. I like office supplies. I like G2 pens. Do you know what I mean? I like flowers, right? My husband comes home with flowers for me, I'm going to be happy, right? It's like a guaranteed, you put this in, this happens. Valerie is pleased and happy, right? There's things that my kids do that delight me or that tickle me. They're, as many of you know, as you've had conversations, my kids are very amusing. They have a very, you know, interesting way of looking at the world. You know, so there's things that they say that tickle me and delight me. You know, there's opportunities that happen, but all of those are connected with what's happening in the natural. Do you know what I mean? You know, someone comes with a slice of cheesecake. I'm like, yay, that makes me happy, you know? But joy is not that, right? Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. you know, the fruit of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control, right? And so because it's a fruit of the Spirit, then we know it is a defining characteristic of God. And we can say that because something isn't a fruit unless it's an intrinsic piece of the thing that's growing. Like, you don't get apples unless you have an apple seed, right? Unless you have a thing that is the essence of apple, you don't get the fruit that is apple, right? Like, unless you have the essence of a banana, you don't get the fruit that is a banana, right? So we can't get the fruit that is joy unless it's growing from the very essence, the core thing that is it, right? So like the fruit of the Spirit, we know God is love. So therefore, you know, the Spirit is God. So therefore, his fruit, love, can be produced in us because he is love, right? So joy can be produced in us because God is joy. And sometimes we get a little like, about that, you know, because I think at the core of it, a lot of times we don't want to, or we shy away from the idea that God at his core is joyful. You know, so many times we are, many of us labor under the weight of unmet expectations, right? And so our own or other people's. So frequently, many of us feel like we don't measure up. Either don't measure up to what other people want us to do, or we don't measure up to what we thought we should do or where we should be, right? Maybe our family doesn't look the way we thought it should look or anything. And so frequently we labor under this weight and pressure of an unmet expectation, of disappointment, of our own disappointment, of other people's disappointment in us, of discouragement, just this weight. So people labor under the weight of shame or of condemnation. And so when we have these kind of burdens, it can be hard to think, oh wait, God, you're joyful, you know? Many times when I'm talking with someone, you know, and they're looking in the Old Testament, they're like, God is an angry God. He's just smiting people, and he's just, you know, wiping people out, you know, and he's like, do this and do that, and he's just, man, he's mad, right? And so you'll hear that sometimes where people go, well, the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament is that God is angry in the Old Testament. He likes us in the New Testament, right? And that's not true. God is the same through the whole thing, right? And if you look in the Old Testament, you see that God has pleasure and delight and love for his people in abundance through the entire Bible. But we so many times labor under this misconception that God is mostly mad at us. He is mostly angry. He's sitting on his throne just waiting to strike us with lightning. Like, he's just waiting. You know what I mean? And that's not him. That is not him. Psalm says that pleasures forevermore are in his right hand. This one's my right hand. Right? That he holds pleasure. That he's the source of all joy. The source of all beauty. So we are doing ourselves a grand disservice when we disconnect ourselves and think that joy has a source anywhere else than God. We disconnect ourselves and we restrain ourselves to a low vision, right? We lower what is possible. We are in a generation and in a time where there is so much sensory bombardment from every place. You know, there's so much stuff that wants to fascinate us. And God made us to be fascinated. Right? He made us to desire beauty. He made us to desire joy, right? To long for that, to long to be fulfilled and stirred up and excited. Like, those are all things he put inside of us, but we've been dulled to what the trueness and the fullness of it is. My youth pastor growing up used to say, only boring people get bored, right? So, you know, if you said, I'm bored, he's like, well, only boring people get bored. And you're like, ooh, am I, I don't know if I don't want to be boring. So you try to figure out how to say something different to like carry the same thing. But it's so true is that we satiate ourselves with something that is not good. And so we don't understand what real goodness and real joy is. If we're not connected to that fountain and that source that is the Lord and the joy that comes from Him, then all we have left are the pleasures that are the things that we can hold in our hand. And so, and then when those things disappear, we realize that they weren't lasting. You know what I mean? And it's not wrong to be pleased, you know? It's not wrong for me to get excited by a new pen, you know? But it has no value in light of eternity. It's just something for me to enjoy right now, right? And so I say that joy is like the lens that we look at things through. If we don't have joy, if we don't have the eternal perspective that good is coming, right? That there's good in the future, you know, then it's like we're looking through a cloudy glass all the time. You know, we can't see and we can't enjoy things. Like, I have contacts in right now, but I wear glasses, right? And so, especially when I was younger, you know, junk would get on my glasses and I wouldn't think about it. You know, and then finally my mom would be like, Valerie, clean off your glasses, right? And so I would take them off and wipe them with the special cloth and everything. And then I'd put them back on. I'd be like, oh, everything's so clear suddenly. Like, I thought I was seeing, but now I'm not. Like, you know, Ron got glasses a couple of years ago. And I'm going to tease him a little bit. But he gets the glasses and we're watching a movie as a family, like later that day. And he goes, did you change the, so he had been saying the whole time that he only needed glasses because like when he was driving, he couldn't see the stuff in the future. And I've worn glasses since I was in third grade, right? So and my eyesight is pretty rough. And so I'm very aware that like, I can't really see. You know what I mean? I can't see out there. I can't see up here. And so he's telling me, well, no, it's just in the distance. And I'm thinking, no, I'm pretty sure like, it affects everything. Like, that's when you notice it. But so he gets his glasses and we're watching a movie and he goes, did you change the settings on the TV? And I was like, no. He's like, it is really crisp. Like, this picture is just really crisp now. The colors are so good. And I'm like, because you needed glasses. Like you needed glasses. It looks crisp because now you can see, right? And that's what joy does for us, right? Because we can see what is coming, because we can see what is ahead, it lets us have a crispness and a beauty in life that otherwise we don't have. You know, it doesn't mean that, like, without that, can you have pleasure in things? Sure. But you're not going to engage with the fullness of the beauty that that the Lord has set out for you, right? If I, Nakiah is my third child. She'll be 6 on Wednesday, right? Yes, that's very exciting. And so when I was pregnant with her, I had sciatica, like a nerve in my back was compressed. And so it hurt really bad. Like one night I remember Ron woke me up and I was already screaming. Like there was just so much pain that I was screaming in my sleep and I woke up already in full voice with him like panicked. Like what's going on? Cause I wasn't responding to him. I was just screaming cause it hurt so bad. And so, without the expectation of her coming, it would have just been pain. You know what I mean? It would have been agony for no reason, for no hope, for nothing. You know what I mean? It would have just been hurt, you know? But because I knew why, what was happening, what was shifted, that there was a child growing, you know, there was a level and an ability of being able to endure through suffering. And so that's a short expectation of good. You know, like when you're pregnant, you're only pregnant for a certain number of weeks, right? It's a blink, right? But with the Lord, the expectation of good is something that stretches into eternity,
yeah.
Right? So it is something that, because it is this thing that lasts for my whole life, you know what I mean? There's signposts in the middle, like good moments in the middle that I'm expecting towards. But there is a moment and a thing where I go, one day I will step into eternity with the Lord and there will be no pain. There will be no suffering. There will be love beyond anything I can imagine. That is where I'm going. There is a future and a hope for me beyond anything I can imagine. There's a future and a hope for my husband, for my children, for this world, right? That is beyond anything I can imagine. There is a future and a hope. And because I can see that, then there is a level of being able to endure anything that comes, right? So like happiness, when the things that make you happy are gone, then you don't have it anymore, right? So like if you're happy because you can run, like you like to jog or whatever, and you can run, you know, and that makes you pleased, makes you happy, then if something happens and you can't do that anymore, then you don't get that happiness anymore. You don't have that anymore, right? And so happiness is something like when the going gets tough, it's gone, right? You know, because if you don't have the thing, then you don't have the happiness anymore. But joy is the thing that when the going gets tough, it keeps growing, right? It keeps growing because it's not satisfied by what's happening right now. It's rooted in what's happening then. And when we're anchored into the Lord and have that eternal perspective of what's happening then, what's coming, that day, that grand and glorious day of the Lord, that future hope, when we're anchored into that, then even when things are tough right now, we are not disconnected from the thing that gives us pleasure. Right? So if the thing that gives me pleasure is, you know, is my kids, right? If something happens and I'm disconnected from my kids, then I don't have that source anymore. But if the thing that gives me pleasure is the love of the Lord, then I'm never separated from that, right? And once again, it's not wrong to get pleasure in temporal natural things. It's not wrong, but it is not the thing that we can be anchored into, right? We can't be anchored into that because we have no control over that, right? We can't be anchored there. I read this quote that said, by William Barclay, that said, endurance is not just the ability to bear a hard thing, but to turn it into glory. That it's not just bearing the thing that is hard, but it is the ability to turn it into glory. There's a verse in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 3:11, where he says, he, meaning God, has made everything beautiful in its time. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Everything. Right? It goes along with that verse in Romans that says, he works all things together for the good of those who love him. All things. And so another thing that my youth pastor used to say is like, all. In the Greek and the Hebrew, that word means all. Right? You know? And so God says he makes everything beautiful in its time. He works all things together for good. So something that I've learned to ask the Lord is when I'm in a time of suffering or grief or just turmoil, pain, is ask God, show me the beauty. Right? Like, you make everything beautiful in its time. So show me the beauty that we're going towards. You know, show me the good that we're going towards. And that's when you start to make that into glory, where you can root down and find the joy even in the midst of it, because God promises, right? He promises that, right? The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, right? If we are connected with his Spirit, then that is what he promises to grow in us. Like, if you plant an apple seed and you do what you're supposed to do with it, then apples are going to come, right? Like, if it's in the right spot, if you do the right stuff, it might take a while, but you're going to get apples, right? You're not going to get something random. You're not going to get, like, I don't know, like kumquats or something, you know? Like, you're going to get an apple. So the fruit of the Spirit is joy. We're going to get joy, right? We're not going to get something else, something random. We're not going to get, like, I don't know. I don't even know what you would get. Like, I can't think of something else to say. Heaviness, right? Yeah, yeah. There you go. There you go. You know, you're not going to get heaviness. You're not going to get despair. You know, if you are connecting, right, with the spiritual aspects of it, if you ask the Lord, he says, you know, you don't have it because you didn't ask for it, right? You have not because you ask not, right? So if you don't have that joy, right, you ask for it. And he says he'll give it. He promises. He promises. He says there's no good thing that I'll withhold. Right? No good thing. That's what he wants for us. He said, I'm saying these things to you so that my joy will remain in you. Not just you'll get a touch of it, a glimpse of it, you'll see it and then it's gone. You know, my joy will remain. It will continue. It will last. It will sustain you, right? And that your joy would be full. You know, God promises to give us exceedingly abundantly more than we can ask or even imagine, right? And so it's like we don't have to worry that he's like up there like, you get one drop of joy and you get two drops and you get, you know what I mean? He's not being miserly with how he's handing it out, right? He says, you ask, and I will pour it out on you. I'll lavish it out on you. I will give you more than you can even imagine. And the way he says to do that is to abide in him, right? To be connected with the true source of love, to be connected with the truth of who he is and what he's doing, to be settled in the hope of glory, right? To love him. And if you're like, okay, well, how do I know that I love the Lord? You know, because I do that thing where I'm like, okay, well, you know, if I'm the one who makes the rules, then I'm going to make sure that I can do it. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm the one who decides how you win, then I'm going to make it really easy for me to win, right? So the Lord, for people like me, he makes sure that it's clear so that I can't wishy-washy and figure out my own, like, loopholes and everything, right? And so he says, you know you love me if you follow my commandments, right? So he says, abide, and I lost my spot. As the Father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. And you're like, okay, so how do I abide in your love, Lord? And he's like, oh, glad you asked. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abided in his love. And these things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. That's how we get that. That's how we get that, you know? We ask the Lord. We pursue his love. We follow his commandments. I'm not sure where Ron got it from, but he say, like, physical growth is a function of time, right? If time passes, you grow, right? Like, Than is two. He is an appropriate height for a two-year-old. You know, in a couple of years, he'll be five. And at that time, he'll be the appropriate height for a five-year-old. You know, time passes and he grows. Time passes and he speaks more. Time passes and he has more physical abilities. You know, it's the time. You know, he does not look the same way he did when he was first born. If he did, there'd be something wrong. Physical growth comes as a function of time. Intellectual growth comes as a function of learning, right? Like, you grow as you learn, as you study, as you get into the books or as you get a class or whatever. So you grow intellectually by learning, right? Time does not help you, right? Like, you know, you have some college people graduating and, you know, and so they could just sit, like, just because you're the age to start college, right? You could just take 4 years and just be like, well, and go to the parking lot every day, let's say. Let's say Katie drives and goes to the parking lot of her school every day and sits there for an entire semester, goes, sits in the parking lot for the day, drives home, goes the next day, sits in the parking lot, drives home, right? After a semester of that, will she have learned what she needed to do, right? So intellectual growth has nothing to do with the time, right? She had to actually put some learning, she had to learn, she had to engage in it. And so spiritual growth is not a function of time. Just because you're like, well, I'm 90. It doesn't really matter in terms of how mature you are before the Lord, right? And just learning doesn't really change how spiritual you are. I know atheists who know a lot about the Bible, but they're not spiritual in any sense of the word, right? So spiritual growth is a function of something totally different, and it's a function of obedience, right? We obey and we grow spiritually. And that's what the Lord is pointing out here. You abide in my love through your obedience. And when you abide in my love, then my joy is able to remain in you. You know, your joy is able to be full because you are connected with the source of all good things and the source of all pleasure. Christian joy is not an act of willpower. I can't just now for my next trick, I'll be joyful. Right? Like that's not how it works, right? It is a response of the heart. It is a response to what God does. I see God clearly and my heart responds with joy because I see the goodness that is coming, right? I don't drum it up inside of myself. And sometimes we put that pressure on ourselves to say that we make it happen. And it's no, the Lord produces it in us. It is a response. You know, if you're struggling with that, if you're like, I don't know if I have the joy of the Lord, then you ask God for it. That's what we just said. You have not because you ask not. The Lord produces that. You ask him to see his love. You ask him to see the good that's coming. You ask him to see the beauty that's coming. If you are someone who, you know, I have friends or I have colleagues who don't see a future. Like, they're like, well, what we have here is all we have. You know, and once it's over, it's done. And I'm just like, it's a really awful way to live, first of all. Yeah, like, you know, it's like, whatever. And so it's, but if there's nothing past this, then there's nothing to anchor it. You know, when stuff gets hard, I have no roots, right? I have nothing to sustain me. You know, it's because I see where we're going that anything, that everything is possible, right? It's a response of my heart, right? And joy is deep and firm. It flourishes in the midst of pain and suffering. Like I just said, because you see where you're going. You see that all things are going to work together for good. You see that God is making it beautiful in its time so you can endure in the midst of the hard time because you see what's coming. And you can say, God, it's hard right now. I don't see a whole lot of beauty right now. But you've promised that you will make everything beautiful. You promised that everything would work together for good. And even though I don't see it at this moment, I know it's coming. I know it's coming, God. I'm sick now, but I know you're a healer, right? I'm hurting now, but I know you're the one who wipes away every tear. You are not a man that should lie. All your promises are yes and amen. So even though I suffer now, even though I'm in trouble now, even though there's a storm now, you are making something beautiful. You are making something good, and you are making something glorious. And you can anchor into that and have the true pleasure that comes from the Lord, not that which is temporal or natural, but the pleasure and the joy that is enduring. That's everything. Lord, I thank you for who you are. I thank you that you are the Father of joy, the Father of pleasure, God. I pray that you would continue to reveal yourself to us. Give us the hope that comes from knowing you, the hope of glory, God. Let us be anchored into the true beauty, the true pleasure, and the true joy that only comes from you, God. That we would not be satisfied with counterfeit, but that we would have that which is eternal. Bless us, God, in Jesus' name.